How are you doing?
Doing okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our live Project Canary space. How are you doing over there, Crystal?
I've been better. I'm very tired today, so as we were talking earlier, I'll probably keep it to an hour. I don't really have a set agenda for tonight because, well, really, I was just going to talk about all the posts I had on my wall because there's a lot of shit from BC. But then as most people probably have seen, unfortunately, my little has gotten sick again. My poor little six-year-old who has some health issues and asthma, who's really at the crux of a lot of why we're trying to stay as safe as we are. Has been like struggling to wear his mask the last few weeks at school, which I understand. He's literally like the only child, and you know, even like bringing him to his before school care last week, one of the girls was like, why are you guys wearing masks, right? And like he's just constantly put in this position of having to, you know, defend himself, and he's six. He doesn't have the ability to do that. So unfortunately, he came home yesterday with just like a really bad cough and a fever. And then about an hour ago, actually, I wasn't sure we were going to make the space. He power vomited all over my house. So I was cleaning that up everywhere. So unfortunately, he's not doing very well. I am trying to avoid getting sick, of course, as most of us are. That sort of brings me to my first thing, which I'll talk about, which maybe I'll say particularly to those in Edmonton. My son is under the Edmonton Public School Board. As many people know, you know, masks and sort of clean air advocacy has been stalled to nowhere in many of these places. So I applied today to be a member of the Inclusive Education Board. So the deadline for that is coming up, and I essentially applied through talking about, you know, the struggles of my son and other children that are going to be within the system and the need for sort of clean air advocacy at this point within the school system, and outlined a number of research things that I will expect them to be considering at such school boards. And knowing that we have sort of this movement of the Take Back Alberta trying to take over the school boards as well, I think it's increasingly important for those who sort of have the spoons at this moment to join where you can. You know, this is a board where there's like three sort of early evening meetings over the year, so it's not a lot, but I know that my tenacity and detail-oriented nature will make sure that they have quite a bit of information for those three meetings, and will be ensuring that they're well-versed in it at those meetings. So that's sort of one thing I've been working on. I don't know, Mel, do you know if there's anything like that in BC?
If there is, I'm sure the Safe Schools Coalition that Jennifer Heighton is a part of is all over it. As far as I know, it's just been little to no support from anywhere in BC because of Dr. Bonnie Henry's presence, right? Like,
well, and let's do a walkthrough of that in terms of when COVID hit in March 2020, schools were not closed for that long in BC. They reopened in May, and for almost 2 years in BC, I believe, masks were actually not mandatory, so students didn't have to wear them when they were sitting or in certain spaces. So it wasn't sort of a mandated mask situation in BC, despite the fact that many thought they were sort of following other things. And there was also, we've talked about it on this podcast as well, the statement by former Premier John Horgan in, I think, late 2020 or early 2021, that children do not get COVID, a statement that he has still sort of not taken back. And as we were just talking in the messages and my comment, Peter Colling, how do you say his name? Peter Collignon? Collignon? Is one of the minimizers, right? And one of many minimizers right now who's in a full backtrack of their statements regarding children in school because of the study that just came out, the sort of large prevalence based study that looked at cases of COVID, and I think it was something like the 70% of them originated sort of from a pediatric case within the family. Well, where are kids? They're at school and they're at daycare, right? And that's something that we've been saying all along. We've always had the estimate of somewhere like, probably 30 to 40% of cases maybe coming from there, but you're seeing through these other things that maybe it's upwards of 70. It's coming in through the kids. So people like Peter now, he stated something. What did he say? The one I commented on, he wrote like an article, "My views from 2020 on why children spread COVID-19 less than adults and closing schools was not the best option." That's his apparent apology. My comment was, "Snort, fuck around, find out, Peter. Welcome," right? Like, welcome to 2023. The research is going to keep coming out, and you can't just go, "Oopsie, we mass infected the children. Oops."
It's scary. Every time I turn on Twitter and I look at the community chats and even in the Facebook parent groups, and you see all these instances of really, really sick kids. Really, really sick kids, right? Like I told you about, like I was chatting with the other baseball moms in my son's league, and like this one mom, her friend, her not her friend, her nephew, right? He had to go get brain surgery. His sinus infection went into his brain and he had pus in his brain, and they had to have an emergency brain operation at Children's. And this is in BC.
Brain abscess, yeah, those have been increasing, and we've seen some stories out of the United States. Remember, their population's larger, so a lot of people pay more attention to the numbers, but
But UK too was the first time I heard about this, right? From the Enemy in a State account, where he like talks about all the COVID cases all over the world. And that's the first time I heard about brain abscesses happening in UK. But hey, guess what? BC's following the UK model, right? Same as the Sweden model. So we're having it, but it's like hush, hush, hush here.
Well, and just a reminder, sort of, that Dr. Bonnie Henry was at the forefront of sort of lying about children not spreading COVID, claiming many, 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 many times without evidence that schools were safe. And even, then after making those statements, co-authored that paper with NBC where she waived the ethics that showed like 80% of kids had caught COVID, but kept saying like, it wasn't the children or schools involved within it, which makes absolutely no sense, as we all know. So this study that came out within the last 24 hours showed that more than 70% of the U.S. household COVID spread started with a child, right? So it's again the indicator of the things that we already knew, and this is what we've been talking about, sadly, each week as we've been talking on these spaces, is that all this research is doing is showing exactly what we already knew and what we've been saying for the last 3 years. And you can see that the number of cases and spread dropped during the school breaks. And that is the exact same relationship that we saw in the BC data, but she refused to acknowledge. So, we're at the place where the CDC is warning children to wear a mask in school and at home so that people don't get harmed by COVID, but it's not mandatory and nobody's expected to do these things. So that brings me to sort of another post that I made today, because I had to go into my general physician's office, or what are they called here? Primary care practitioner. There's all these different names in the different provinces. So I went in, I have to get my prescription refilled every 3 months. And in order for me to do that, because I'm the meds I'm on, I have to see my physician in person every 3 months to get my prescription redone. So I go to do this, and I go at the earliest I can. It's a 10 a.m. on a Saturday. And I think there was probably 15 people there in the line when I got there. Nobody was masked. I was the only person masked, including the sort of admin within the spaces. One of them put a mask on eventually when more people came. Let me give the three examples of some of the people in front of me. So one is this sort of like, let's say trucker looking supporting friend of ours, and was in line, barely has a voice, like struggling to breathe, tells them that he has been super sick for 9 days, struggling to sort of breathe still, needs to get checked out, it's not getting better, no mask on, right? So just sits there coughing for the next 54 minutes while I'm waiting in the waiting room. And then there's a little girl, probably about 8 years old. She's very similar, like looks like she's sort of struggling to breathe. She's really stuffy. She's sort of waiting. She's there with her dad, and neither of them wearing masks. And he just has her like snotting all over and like coughing on everybody. Again, no masks on these people. And then a university student came in. I would suspect a university student from sort of the look that they had and the backpack and whatnot, but put on their N95 mask once they got into the doctor's office, but was coming in with like sore throat, fever. So it was just like back to back to back to back. All these people sort of chronically, acutely ill that were sitting in the doctor's office, the place where all the vulnerable people have to go, myself included. And how am I supposed to access that space safely? I'm like I have to. I'm required by my physician to go in person every 3 months to get my medications, and I'm in a position where I'm literally surrounded in 15 people, acutely ill, none of them masking. Right? I'm the only one in a mask. I'm like tucked in the corner, waiting outside where I can, but was waiting for almost an hour. And sort of got in, got out where I could. But, then I go to drop off my prescription. There's the maskless pharmacist shows up coughing all over. Like it's bonkers, and it's really horrifying the lack of sort of medically safe spaces that there are for people that need to be accessing care. And in response to the post I made about it, so the tweet that I made, it says the fact I have to attend a medical clinic slash pharmacy combo full of sick people that are not masked to get my prescription refilled to stay healthy is fucking outrageous. So then you have some trolls jump on that are like, "Well, just stay home," and I'm like, "I fucking would, you dipshit." Like, that's what I would fucking prefer, but I'm not allowed to do that. Like, do you think I want to be there, right? Do you think I want to get sick? Like, what are these people thinking that they literally, their thoughts about the world right now are that they should be able to go out and infect anybody that they want at a doctor's office? What if it's full of people in chemo? Like, are we, I know we're at that place and we've been at that place for a while, but to have it like so clearly outlined is, it's a fresh slap in the face, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I remember my incident at Superstore. I was in the Fraser Valley and my family was masked, and I had some guy like literally chase my son and I down and yell at us in the frozen food aisle about us wearing masks. So I no longer go and shop where people were like that shop. I now go and camouflage and I go shop at TNT or the Korean supermarket. So I'm usually in some Asian supermarket blending in with the other Asians that are still masking in BC. 'Cause seriously, that's literally the only few remaining places where I feel safe and I'm not harassed for being a masker.
Well, and that's the strangest part, right? Is like I'm in the doctor's waiting room to see my doctor, actively surrounded in sick people without a mask, and some of these fuckers are trying to stare me down, Mel. And I was not having it today. I just stared right at them. I'm like, "You fucking come at me today. I would love for you to say something to me today, right? And just be like, yeah, I'm not sick, fucker. That's why I have this goddamn mask on. Like, I'm trying to stay that way, and yet you're here staring me fucking down for wearing a mask at the doctor's office while you're hacking a lung. This is insanity.
Dude, you're in like Edmonton. You're like deep in Canadian MAGA country right now because you
But this
guys just
is
elected
no.
Danielle Smith.
But to be fair, this is like the probably the most. I'm not gonna say woke. The most liberal area of Alberta, though, right? Like when I was moving here, I was looking at the orange blip in the sea of blue. That's why I stationed myself in Edmonton, and even within the election, there, all of Edmonton went to NDP, right? And to be fair, as I talked about last week, 2,611 votes were the difference between Danielle Smith being our premier and not, right? Like six areas within Calgary, ranging from 119 votes to like 780, had more people voted, it wouldn't have been Danielle Smith. So despite the fact that she did win a majority and all these things, it wasn't by very much, right? And all of the people that lost their positions from UCP were related to healthcare, right? So there was a sort of statement made about healthcare. It just wasn't nearly loud enough. But I'll try to stay at AHS. Oh, but before I jump off AHS, because I can't not mention it. Mel, did you see the post about Dina Hinshaw?
No, she's back.
The horror. Oh, yeah, what the fuck? And the best part was the tweet that AHS put out. Let me find it. Because they did not confirm nor deny. Because there was the thing that went out saying essentially that Dina Hinshaw was now back to being in a position over like the Indigenous wellness people like group, which is a what? Yeah,
What?
I mean, I
She
have
got
so many thoughts.
fired from taking care of the health of white people, so they put her in the Indigenous health. Is that correct?
Whose health we've been battering because at first we
Wow.
recognized that they were at heightened risk and then we decided to just stop talking about that and not give them anything that they needed. But their response to this was AHS doesn't speak to personnel matters. Dr. Hinshaw is not employed by AHS. AHS is reviewing the position and remains firmly committed to working with Indigenous communities and working to improve health outcomes for all communities and populations. First, why do you have to review it if she's not in it? And two, nobody talks about everybody's communities and populations. Like, just focus on what you need to do for the Indigenous peoples instead of continuing to sort of push it under the rug. So that's AHS, but I want to step back to BC because there were a number of sort of things that I think we should talk about because the dam is breaking in healthcare in BC, right? And I think that's become fairly obvious in the last week or two with the influx of doctors that have been publicly speaking out in BC, which has typically not been the case. Having lived in both British Columbia and Alberta has had a much louder doctor population speaking out against the lack of protection measures across time. But we've really seen that breakdown in the last couple weeks, with more doctors coming forward.
And
So
thank you. I'm so glad they are coming forward because we need their voices, right? Silence is complicity. Did you see that article that came out today about if the ER doctors call in sick, they have to pay for the replacement? What?
that's one of four articles I have pulled up because there was a lot of stuff that dropped today.
Can you
So,
put them in the nest?
oh, yes. So hold on. I will find them as we are talking about this. So I'm going to first talk about this one that I'm putting up, which is the one, which is not about the one you're talking about. This is from Nanaimo Regional General Hospital from Vancouver Island Health. So this is a commentary by an emergency physician there. So this is sort of the line that I highlighted. How did we reach such a point, low point in patient care, where it has become acceptable to admit a patient to a BC community hospital with no doctor assigned as the most responsible physician directing treatment? So what essentially this doctor is saying is that inpatients are orphaned and unattached. So there's just a lack of standard of care that's beginning to happen. So the patients who've become sick enough to require inpatient care are languishing in the already overcrowded emergency room department hallways, frequently being handed from one emergency doctor to the next. So some physician knows vaguely about their existence, but no one is specifically directing their inpatient care. So this quote unquote new solution is allowed to go on until a facility's inpatient census falls below a certain threshold and a hospitalist can be assigned to assume inpatient coverage. This is unacceptable, unkind, and unsafe. And man, I really got to hand it to Christopher for using the word unkind in there, because that has been the hallmark of Dr. Bonnie Henry throughout this, that if we're simply kind, that it will make up for the fact that people are dying in our hospitals. And people have died in our hospitals and on the way to the hospital because of lack of paramedics, also something that I've been tracking on bchospitaldata.com across time. So further on in this letter, our exhausted ED nurses and ward aides already can't provide for a patient's basic needs to sleep, eat, urinate, have their clothes and bed clothes changed, and have a semblance of privacy, let alone give them a caring hand to hold on to for a second or two. Emergency departments can't function, and we're never meant to fill this new gaping hole in the provision of healthcare. So, the article is longer. You're welcome to go read that if you want. But there's a whole bunch in there to insert of about what this ED doctor is saying about how the operations are working right now. So if I move to the one that you were talking about there, Mel, with the memo, let me find that. I'll put it in the nest. Ch-ch-ch-ch. Here we go. Okay, so that one's up in the nest now. So this is the one that you're talking about the emergency room doctors and those calling in sick. So again, as we know, hospitals have been chronically understaffed. Again, something I've been tracking at BC Hospital Data. Although I'll just insert randomly here on a tangent that this week we also had a hospital say they were closed because of smoke, and which is a health concern, so I'm not sure why you'd close the urgent care. But yeah, they said that they closed the urgent care because of smoke in the area. But this one is an internal memo from St. Paul's Hospital and Mount St. Joseph Hospital. And it's an internal memo to emergency department staff at these hospitals suggesting that the doctors calling in sick pay half of the financial incentive in place to encourage others to cover their shift. So the memo says that the hospitals departments don't have the budget to cover frequent sick calls. Mel.
Why don't you put the masks back in the hospitals during a pandemic?
Oh.
Or maybe UV light. But hey, Barry Hunt's gonna come and tell us why UV light got banned in Canada in 2021 after they knew COVID is airborne. I
Right.
don't
So
understand how that works.
the same hospitals that have had masks pulled for months now are also saying we do not have the budget to continue with such frequent incentives to help find coverage. Some suggestions included having the individual pay for half of the incentive money, as well as consider having someone on call daily for last minute coverage. So because they are not able to staff their hospitals, which has been going on for some time due to frequent illness because they took masks away, they're now trying to tell the doctors that are surviving this barely that they're going to have to pay for coverage because they then get sick in the hospital that's not masked.
You want to talk about breaking a system by breaking its people? That's how you break its people. I mean, we need these doctors. What are you doing?
And in what land do you think that adding that to staffing shortages and already burnout is going to result in any sort of improvement in the system? It's not. The burden on the staff is just going to be heavier, and then you're financially hitting them as well. Morale is already very, very low, right? Morale is next to impossible, and they keep saying that they're recruiting doctors, but they don't care about retaining them, and that is exactly what we're seeing within the system. Everything is very, very broken, right? And we have been seeing this across sort of all the health districts. You know, I just talked about one in Island Health, but we saw in Fraser Health, one of the biggest sort of hospitals of Surrey Memorial Hospital was going to be diverting, was talking about diverting people, that there's understaffing and overcrowding, and that's the physicians from that hospital speaking out, right? That they're worried about the care that's being provided to their patients. And being a care provider, I can say there is nothing more untenable than being put into a system where you feel like you're causing harm, right? That is moral distress and moral injury at its peak. And that's sort of the position that many of the care providers are being put in now. However, I am going to slap people upside the head as I say that, because I also saw the tweets by, again, the Doctors of BC president today, Mr. Josh, I'm talking to you, putting up pictures of the frickin' doctors' meeting that they had in the AGM. And wouldn't you know, not one of them were wearing a goddamn mask, Mel.
So they are their own super spreader event. Good job, guys. Good job.
Right, which, you know what? You want to go get you and your other doctor sick? Fine. Fuck off. But that's not what's going to happen, Mel, because where do you think a lot of those doctors are going after they attend those events the next day?
They go home to their families and then they go see their patients, their vulnerable
Correct. They're
patients, all week
vulnerable
long.
patients.
All week long, while infectious, by the way. And now that there are no PCR tests and the rapid tests most likely won't pick up any XBB. So now you have these infected doctors now infecting their vulnerable patients that come and see them while they're sick, which then spread it back into the community. Good job.
Right. So listen up, doctors. If you're not wearing a mask, stop fucking complaining about the sickness in your hospitals. Okay? Because you're actively playing a role in that. And you cannot have it both ways. You cannot expect that you're going to be taken care of and that people are going to do these things and not offer the bare minimum to the vulnerable people that are in your vicinity and the bare minimum that's going to assist you in reducing the staffing shortages that you have. You need to use your whole brain and do all the things that are going to help, not just selectively pick and choose what you want to apply. It can't just be you're an ally sometimes and then you forget about it when you go to your AGM meeting. That's not the way that this works. Hi, Cindy.
Hey, how are you guys?
I'm a hot mess.
Besides raging, and rightfully so. Sorry to hear about your kiddo.
Oh, I'm just so tired, right? And I'm tired that we're watching this, and I'm going to bring up a story from outside BC, the article from New Brunswick, right? That they just lifted the mask mandate for employees there, and now there's COVID outbreaks at seven of the long-term care homes there. Right.
How are they not connecting the dots?
I don't. This is. Are they not connecting the dots, or do they just not care? Right. Because the responses are this is sort of living with COVID. It's not living with COVID. People are dying with COVID. People are becoming maimed and disabled with COVID. Our children are being mass infected with COVID. Nobody's living with COVID. And as we watch our hospitals collapse, that's pretty fucking clear as we watch the driving accidents go up because there are cognitive issues with executive functioning. That's pretty fucking clear. As we watch people, 50 years and older dying en masse, that's pretty fucking clear. As we watch 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds have strokes and die in front of us on television live. That's pretty fucking clear.
Yeah, what baffles me is that they're seeing this firsthand. People in care homes, workers in care homes are seeing this. So I'm just really surprised that more of those people that are witnessing this aren't speaking out.
Oh, the joy of cognitive dissonance. And I wish that I could say I'm surprised, but I'm not, right? And this is why, at this point, as we're seeing the impacts more and more, as we're seeing the research more and more, these people are going to get even more squirrely about it because they're realizing more and more what the impacts are. So that cognitive dissonance becomes even ever increasingly sharp. And that's why people are staring me down in the goddamn doctor's office while they're the ones sick and coughing, and I'm still trying to not get sick because they're at the place now, they want to force it on us. Because if they have to live through it, then so do we. And this is why we're at the place people want to ban masks. They want to do this shit. They don't want to bring the mask mandates back. Even in the face of overwhelming evidence that this is going to be very, very bad for our society, right? That all these breakdowns in the supply chain, in staffing shortages, in workers' rights, that this is not, we're not going to wake up tomorrow We're not going to wake up in 2024 and these things are going to be fixed because we decided to live with COVID, quote unquote. Does anybody see what's fucking happening around us in the hospitals? Like just this stuff from BC this week. So another thing that came out, let me go grab it. This one I do want to share. Okay, so first I'll share the New Brunswick one that I was just talking about. So that one's up. But I want to talk about the maternal outcomes because we're what people don't realize is A, specialties take forever to go through and actually get educated in, right? Like, and we don't have that many in Canada. So when we lose just like a few OBGYNs, that has a big impact on many of our systems. And the fact is that many of these systems and hospitals were not grown in adequate supply and were under-resourced before the pandemic. And then the pandemic hit and it sort of escalated all those issues that we were already seeing. But we see that in the Central Okanagan, which includes births at Kelowna General Hospital, there has been a climbing birth rate in those areas. But what we're seeing is that we're having less obstetrics physicians there. So we previously had 13 and now we're going to drop down to 11, which might not sound like much, but the fact is that for July, August, and September of 2023, so like next month and 3 months through that, there will be no available providers for maternity patients. So the people that were already pregnant and having babies, what are they supposed to do? Well, they would have to navigate their pregnancy using walk-in clinics or urgent care centers. So we're going to put our pregnant people
That's terrible.
into the giant infection centers where nobody is masked and they don't have maternity services now.
That's terrifying because what if it's a complicated birth? Wow.
No idea because both of mine were complicated at Kelowna General Hospital. Oh, your mic's doing something funny, Mel.
And pregnant women are at a higher risk of SARS-CoV-2 complications, regardless of whether they're vaccinated. You know, it's more so if you're not, but they're still at a higher risk even if
Right, because
vaccinated, I
being
should.
pregnant is an immunocompromised state, right?
Absolutely.
Which people seem to forget is that you are at an immunocompromised risk when you are pregnant because of what's going on in your body. And we knew that from the beginning. But we even see, like, in Kamloops, maternity clinic at Royal Island Hospital is closed and no longer taking patients due to a doctor shortage. Dick said they hope to have a solution soon.
Did you see that article that came out
Wow.
about that mom? She almost lost her son giving birth at Surrey Memorial Hospital. It's like one of the major big hospitals here in the Lower Mainland in BC.
Yes, so there have where is that one? I want to find it actually. Because yeah, I found that one. I'm just reading the article. But there was also the article. So this is a CBC article. I don't have it pulled up on Twitter, but I'll just read it here. The title is "Resource Crisis Has Led to Countless Close Calls at Surrey Memorial OBGYN Say." So 36 physicians in obstetrics and gynecology joined lists of doctors speaking out about crisis. So the doctor there had essentially said that, women and babies, yeah, they're not going to be okay. And I expect that we're going to see a sort of decrease in those maternal outcomes, right? Where, yeah, we're going to lose women and babies because we're back in that place where we don't even have people that can see them. And that's sort of the world we're living in, right? Surrey Memorial Hospital is one of the busiest hospitals in BC, serving as the home hospital for one of the fastest growing communities in the province, right? They oversee 6,000 deliveries every year. What are we going to do when we don't have any doctors to birth the babies in the entire province? Because that's where we're at. That's three different health districts where some of their maternity services have gone down. Island Health, Interior Health, and Fraser Health, right? God knows what's going on in Northern Health. Like, Northern Health hasn't reported anything since about 2020, so.
Scented oils and candles, I guess. Maybe some crystals.
Yeah, and just there is no, they're not presenting any solutions to these things, right? They're simply trying to manage the sort of public's, the public's view of what is going on. But now, again, that dam is breaking with NBC, and the physicians are finally stepping up and sort of speaking out, because the outcomes for the patients at this point are becoming untenable for them to watch happen, right? They can't continue to do this. The moral distress is going to sink in. And as that sinks in, they are going to lose more doctors, and this problem will get worse. We've been recording from the beginning to record the collapse, but like we are mid collapse, right? Like we said at the beginning this year, we'd sort of fallen off the precipice. This is free fall, right? This is where services completely degrade. They fall apart. This is where they're going to push privatization, right? More and more, which will only further degrade the services and make it even more unsuccessful in those areas, right? Public health will become one of the worst areas for people to be in, because it will be the hardest stuff and a lot of losses and under-resourced. And that is the way we're headed, but they're sort of letting us fall there.
But it's not just us. It's not just Canada it's happening to. It's happening in the UK too.
They're ahead of us for sure, right?
It's listening all the way from the UK. But like, yeah, their NHS is failing too. This is happening to all kinds of private health. I mean, in Australia and also in New Zealand, everywhere that they follow this GBD, let it rip model, it's crashing all the national health services globally.
Yes, and part of that, well, a large part of it is simply because the failure to acknowledge what the root cause of most of this has been, which is COVID, right? Like, nobody wants to say the C word. Like, it's like we have all these articles talking about all these impacts, but also the refusal to actually name COVID as a primary factor in it. And while we still continue on that way, while we refuse to sort of engage and implement clean air within these systems, within our schools, within the hospitals, we're going to continue to see this. And unfortunately, we might not have enough healthcare workers left at the end of it to actually fix what they broke. We're not going to be able to pull sort of people from other countries, because the other countries are doing the same thing. So what we'll see at that point, which I saw an article about this earlier and we've talked about before, they'll start pushing uncredentialed people into the positions or lower credentialed people to try and make up for these deficits, and the care will degrade further and it will be more unsafe because they will simply put in who they can, such as Quebec having like one third unlicensed teachers in their schools now.
What? I didn't even know that.
Oh yeah. So I think it's either a quarter or a third of the teachers this year there were like non-credentialed teachers. And I wish I could find the article. I was reading it today. There was an article today about how we're going to have to look at sort of changing the requirements for the medical system. And I'm like, that's not quite how it works. We need the surgeon who's actually had the practice.
That's terrifying. Wow. When are our leaders going to see this as the national security threat that it is? Like, our society cannot survive when there are no doctors and surgeons available left. Do you know the Pentagon's installing UVC light at the Pentagon? So they are sterilizing their air. The Pentagon understands that COVID is airborne, yet the rest of everywhere doesn't get it yet. So I'm wondering, honestly, when are they going to figure out that when society
Davos
crashes,
safe, baby? We've already seen this. Davos safe, right? They're going to implement it in the areas where they have the money, where they start to want to protect certain people, such as like Biden having certain tests done before, and you know, Taylor Swift, who's on tour with her mom, who's compromised, she's wearing masks, she canceled her meet and greets, but she still holds the super spreader events and her audience is getting sick everywhere, right? So they'll do what they do to protect themselves and fuck the rest.
Yeah, I mean, even Beyonce only booked stadiums that are open air. I noticed that. They understand, the elite and the billionaires, they understand that it's airborne. right? Like Beyonce's, if you look at her tour, her global tour, they're only open air stadiums, which is really fascinating.
And we're disposable. Like our governments view us as disposable, and that's a fact. You know, it's nothing nefarious. It's just a fact. So
They do, and unfortunately, they're causing their own collapse, right? I was thinking, I think about this often, right? The sort of role that we each play in society, and how often they forget at the top that the bottom keeps the entire foundation of society going. You know, an example I was thinking about, you know, if I have to take time off this week, I'm the only PhD clinical psychologist in all of young adult services, right? In that program, I'm the only person serving young adult services for psychosis. So if I go down the whatever number of clients on my roster, there's no one to fill in for me. There's no coverage. If I become disabled, there's no one to take that job. And it's a specialty area. Not anyone can just jump in and have the knowledge or the awareness to be working in those areas. Each person that we lose, despite that they find us disposable, will crush the system even more, right? And that's what we're seeing is that they can undervalue the doctors. But when all the doctors are leaving and they can't force them to pay for their replacements and all those things, they'll be left with nothing but rubble.
I think we're also seeing our democracy eroded.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not excited to watch Danielle Smith for the next years, right? But
I can't even. I her voice, I can't even pretend to listen. I'm cringing as soon as she starts talking.
I cried on the couch when Trump was elected for the very reason of what we're watching now, right? Is that I'm always a person that's looking forward, and we always follow the pendulum swing of the United States. And we are on the pendulum swing of super far right, baby.
Tragically so. And it's so diluted. It's like stepping back into time, you know, with Sister Wives and with Wade versus Roe and with the attack on transgendered people. It's incredulous to watch, really.
And they feel righteous in it, right? That's the hard part, is the people that are staring at me in the doctor's office, they think it's their right to sort of maybe cause harm to me. And that's just, I'm a human that my entire being is oriented around not harming others around me, even those that I don't agree with. And to watch so much of the world come to a place where they actively would cause harm for nothing other than they just feel like it. Oh, it's crushing on a daily basis.
But we have to talk about health supremacy and the idea of health supremacy and its linkage to Christianity and religion itself. I mean, the people that are voting for Danielle Smith and Trump are Christian, right? They believe in health supremacy, and a lot of it is very ableist because they feel that if you are stricken with illness, if you are lame, and if you are weak, it has to do with something that you've done to deserve it. That's
Well,
part of health supremacy.
they believe in it until it's their family members that are waiting 12 hours in the ER. And then they're yelling about it like everybody else. And then they're blaming the doctors. And then they're yelling at the doctors. And they're yelling at the nurses, right? Like, they believe it until it's them. And isn't that the fucking way of the world, right? That you. I posted today on my Instagram about this sort of saying to people. You're not going to care until you're one of them, until you're part of the disabled community. And some of you reading this will be part of that community shortly, right? Wake the fuck up. You will be the disabled community, whether you like it or not, it's coming for you.
But no one ever thinks it's going to happen to them. No one ever thinks they're going to become disabled or become immune compromised.
Because they trust the words that people are saying over the actions and the policies that they're doing. And I wish that that was atypical for us as humans, but that is, right? We've had, you know, we have the doctors of BC Head congratulating Bonnie Henry on her talk about kindness. any head of Doctors of BC should be listening to the people on the ground who have been breaking the dam the last 2 weeks, but instead he's out there celebrating Dr. Henry. You're so far removed from the actual people that are part of this that it's just a joke, right? It's just absurd. Like watching these people, they're just so far removed from the actual groundwork. And isn't that sort of the way of management and administration, right? That they have a lot to fucking say, but never there to actually do the work. I think we have a rough time to come this winter, Mel, with our hospitals as they are. This COVID's not seasonal. We've seen that. We've seen sort of the steady state bottom line continue to creep up to the high, you know, high levels. And our hospitals have never emptied of people. The dead have never stopped. The excess deaths have only risen, including among the younger populations. And we are just on the cusp of vaccines sort of scrubbing out of everybody's system. Most people are going to be at their 6 months before too long, and most people don't have access to another vaccine right now, at least not one that's going to fundamentally work well. So if we think it's bad now in the hospitals, I want to see it in 6 months, unfortunately.
Oh, that's going to be horrible. You know, and back to religion, when their family members are affected, we have the likes of Robert Kennedy, whose solution is to put them away in institutions and carry on, even their own family members. You know, so it's not a matter of finding a solution. It's a matter of stuffing the sick family members away because they think there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, and they'll just turn off to the level of care they're getting. They'll turn off, right? Because it's a selfish oriented move, and they'll just say, this is the way it is. This is the way long-term care is now. People aren't fighting for better. They're just accepting the state as it is. And that's truly heartbreaking to me because I'm a person that is so focused on improvement of things because we can always make it better. And our entire public health system in the last 3 years has degraded 100 years of progress and continue to do so, right? Like it's, I'm, you know, a few things that go through my mind, like it's going to be in 6 months when all the vaccines have worn off. What's it going to be in 5 years when all the childhood vaccines have been impacted because Steve Kirsch is out there saying that vaccines cause autism again with a huge following and throwing money at people to support these things? What's it going to be in 10 years when we see the actual long-term viral impacts of COVID, like all the other viruses we've talked about and not discovered what they do for 10 to 20 years, right? Those are just basic things that these people aren't thinking about.
And they're not thinking about microbial resistance either, antimicrobial resistance, you know.
Oh God, yeah. Remember when they were just throwing antibiotics at everybody last year, like at the kids because the strep, it was just like, no, we won't wear masks. We'll just give everybody antibiotics. They were talking about preventative antibiotics in the UK.
Oh, Jesus. And then you have people who are immune compromised because of SARS-CoV-2 infections at varying stages that just is revolving in a cycle. And you're going to really boost the projection of how quickly this antimicrobial
Absolutely. And we'll sort of, we're going to lessen the tools that we have available to deal with the outcomes. People are still acting surprised that there's sort of increases in various sicknesses and whatnot, right? And none of it's surprising, but nobody wants to act as if it's one puzzle piece of the very large COVID puzzle right now. And we're still in such denial, which is wild. It's as a psychologist, it's really actually, it's like mind bending a little bit to see society as a whole sort of deny something. But I remind myself that this is the case with sort of ableism, with racism, with sexism. This has always been the case with these sorts of things. We're just seeing it on a much grander scale. And I highly think the role of social media will be dissected with some time to come, right? That the proliferation of misinformation, the proliferation of this sort of bad data is playing a significant role in this, and sort of the celebrity culture that has built around people and the attention that they seek. You know, we have the Zaynep's, the Steve Kirsch's, where it's really not about evidence-based information. It's not about perspectives. It's about trying to make the loudest splash so that you get the most attention. If we make it to 2040, it's going to be fascinating to look at history right now.
Oh, tie in climate change there. We're just heading down.
Right, wildfires burning all around us, things burning down. We're like, no, it's fine. It's fine. Not going to wear a mask.
Oh, well,
Air quality index of 10 plus, not going to wear a mask.
and the droughts too, that affects crops for feeding people and animals. Like, food is going to be a crisis.
Well, we haven't talked about the fact that when it actually does get bad, the climate refugees that will come towards our areas because of the, freshwater supplies that we have, because of the land that we have, right? That we're going to be a huge place for climate refugees to end up moving to. One thing that we're not prepared for in any way. We can't take care of our own population right now, and that will sort of further degrade all these things that we're talking about.
It's real, and they've tried to suppress it for so long, and we're watching it unfold. In situations like this, it's really hard to keep your head above water. And these are times where, often I'll wish, ignorance upon myself, because ignorance truly is bliss if you can just walk blindly through this, right? So it's a unique position we're in, and I think we just got to continue to do what we're doing and try to get that information out there the best that we can, despite everybody trying to other us and label us as being the crazy ones or the ones not being correct. Even people with degrees, they're saying you're wrong, and it's just incredulous to hear that from somebody, and you're just like, what?
I think the joy of this for most of us that are still sort of stuck here at the end and wearing our masks is that most of us, I suspect, have some, and it's a much misused term, but I'm going to use it here, the sort of thread of neurodivergence, right? That this thread of many of us were never people that sort of went along with what society thought for much of our life. Like even as a child, I was pushing back on these sorts of things and why we didn't have community care, why we weren't doing those things. I was always sort of pushing the boundaries of what we should be doing for others. And I think those are the people that have aggregated in the end to trying to save us from COVID, is that they're people that have always seen the big picture, not just for themselves, but for their communities. And in my experience, and I can only speak to mine, that's not something I can ever turn off. There are days I wish to, like you, Cindy. Ignorance is bliss, right? But is it really? I can't ever see myself doing anything else. And I mean, goddamn, if I have to go down fighting for it, I will. Like that's always been my point is I would rather die burned at the stake than kneeling at a false altar that gives me hope that doesn't exist.
Same, exact same. I'll see you at the stake.
Yeah, and they'll be coming for us eventually, right? Like that's the thing. It gets worse before it gets better. And to be honest, I don't know what will get better with this because we've fallen so far from the fixability of it, from community, from working together, that the piecemeal of society at this point is pretty rough.
It's so true. And the parts that are organized and have come together and remain together are the extreme religious groups, and they just follow the leader. And they have so much money, and they are so well organized, especially the brethren and evangelistic sects, and they are controlling this horrible narrative, especially when it comes to vaccines.
Absolutely. But I hear my little guy coughing, and Spaces is being really fucking weird right now and kicked Mel out, and she can't get back in.
Oh my God, it's been weird all night with other spaces too. It's not you.
Yeah, there's
Definitely
some
spaces.
weird going on with Spaces. But we covered most of what we will. We'll be back next week on Saturday, and hopefully, Spaces will be a little bit more functional. But either way, we'll sort of upload this on the podcast as we usually do by Wednesday. So, yeah, we keep going, Cindy. We keep sharing the info. That's all we got right now. So, thanks for joining us again. It's nice to talk to you as always.
Yeah, you too. Take care of your little guy. Hope he feels better real soon.
Yeah, have a good night.
Thanks. Bye.
Oh, thank you.